Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, April 28th. I'm Christine Alexandria for KMET. In tonight's news, a hero from the Paradise Fire goes missing in Fort Bragg. Advocates say public transit got a raw deal as funds from Measure O are divided. Local small businesses and nonprofits scramble to adapt to changes to tariffs and government funding. And furry creatures, rebels, and fighter pilots descend on the redwoods. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Fort Bragg Police Department is searching for Michael Kleppe, a husband and a father who's been missing since last Thursday. Kleppe risked his life to save others during the 2018 Paradise Fire, but has now vanished without a trace. KCYX's Elise Cox reports.
It was a normal Thursday morning when Shirley Kleppe's husband Mike left for work.
He gave me a kiss goodbye and he went to work. And he told me, I'll see you when I get home. It's just a normal day, nothing going on.
But that afternoon, Mike didn't come home. By 4:30 p.m., Shirley started to worry. By 5 p.m., still no sign of him. Shirley called his workplace. His car was there, but he wasn't. When Shirley and her daughter went to retrieve the car, they found an envelope inside. It contained Mike's bank cards, a key to their storage unit in Paradise, and a letter.
I read it, and it, in so many words, he said that, I don't want to live like this anymore. Our life is not the same no more. Oh, and then he signed it, just Mike, not love you or nothing. So I thought, okay, something's not right here. That's not my Mike.
Mike's sudden disappearance has left Shirley and their family devastated. They have lived with trauma before. They survived the deadly Paradise Fire in 2018, which destroyed the town and killed dozens of people. During that fire, Shirley said, Mike became a hero.
We were running apartment 84 complex. We were the apartment managers. The owner asked him to go to his house to help him evacuate. And then the fire was getting closer. I called. The apartment owner said, you're safe, Shirley. You're in the middle of town. You're the safest place to be. Well, apparently I wasn't. And Mike knew that. And he took the owner's truck to get to me. He ran out of gas on Pearson Road, which is probably about 8 miles from our house. And he got out and he walked through the fire, the smoke, everything to get where I was. And we had no car to get out because he left his car at his boss's house. And we didn't know what to do. But our first thing was to make sure that all the people out of the apartments were out because they were elderly people. And there was a gentleman, a veteran, that was there, and he couldn't walk. And my husband busted out the front window to get to him, and we got him out. Well, he had his car that his caregiver drives, and we got into that. We got out of there. It looked like midnight, but it was only 9:30 in the morning. And we started driving down Clark Road, and I kept saying, I'm going to stay on Clark to get out. I'm not going to try the Skyway. It's too impacted. So they directed us on a road that was really bad, Row Road. And I was watching people driving off the roads, driving up the embankments, watching young kids, their parents running towards the fire, which I could never understand from this day, but... Anyway, so we got to a dead stop. We weren't moving no more. And the fire sounded like a train coming through. The propane tank's going off and everything. And I go, we're not going to make it, are we? There was too many cars in front of us. And I go, we're going to die. And he goes, no one's going to die today. If it's up to me, it's not going to happen.
The aftermath of the fire left Shirley with severe PTSD. She sought counseling. Mike did not.
He was my rock. He is more of a giver, not a taker. And he doesn't talk about anything. He keeps everything inside. Everything inside.
In the years since the fire, Mike struggled with health problems, COPD, vision issues, and low oxygen levels that caused his nose to turn purple. Shirley said she pleaded with him to seek medical help, but he refused. Now she fears those struggles, combined with the lingering trauma of the fire, may have overwhelmed him.
But he doesn't realize what he's left behind, because we're all in question. We're all, why? Why did you have to leave? Why can't you stay here? Tell me what's going on.
Mike is described as about 5'8", weighing about 180 pounds, with a mustache and a beard. His hair and beard are sandy gray, and he is balding on top. He has scars on his right foot from a fall years ago. Shirley believes Mike may have been drawn to the outdoors, perhaps the beach or the forest, but she worries about his ability to survive in Fort Bragg's cold, damp climate. He left with some cash, but no car and no phone.
So if he were to listen to this broadcast, what would you want to say to him?
I would say, Mike, come home. We love you. Your family misses you. We just need you back.
Anyone with information about Mike's whereabouts is urged to contact the Fort Bragg Police Department.
That was Elise Cox reporting from Mendocino County. Humboldt County supervisors have decided how to split the projected $24 million Measure O sales tax revenue between roads and bus transit. Transit got less than some public commenters lobbied for during the recent supervisors' meeting. Daniel Mintz reports.
Compromise prevailed at the April 22nd board meeting as supervisors unanimously voted to have 85% of Measure O revenue go to improving roads. The countywide sales tax was approved by voters last November, and although the dual purpose was part of the measure, shares of revenue weren't specified. Revenue from Measure O will be significant. The 1% sales tax increase is expected to generate $24 million in annual revenue. An ad hoc committee comprised of Supervisor Steve Madrone, Supervisor Mike Wilson, and representatives of several agencies recommended 86% of Measure O for roads. The 14% for transit is the average of what committee members supported. During a public comment period, Colin Fisk of the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, CRTP, said the transit share should be at least 20%, and even then road spending will be exponentially greater.
Adding 20% of Measure O revenue to transit with the remaining 80% to roads would still result in 8.5 times as much money being spent on roads as transit. So even at that 20% figure, roads will get a lot more money, or you might say be more highly valued by the county than public transit. Of course, you can point out that more people drive than ride the bus in this county, and that's true partly because we have not invested enough in our transit system, but a lot of people do rely on the bus. At least 36,000 people in the county, that's 27% of the population, don't have driver's licenses, for example.
Arcata resident and CRTP board member Peggy Martinez, who advocates for the blind, also lobbied for a 20% transit share, saying, quote, there are many of us who do not drive, and there are very valid reasons for not driving. Environmental Protection Information Center Executive Director Tom Wheeler described himself as using Humboldt Transit Authority bus transit, quote, for a significant portion of my transportation needs. He said the authority starts each year with a budget shortfall, and a 20% transit share will make the agency solvent.
What is this structural deficit that we keep hearing about? So $4 million a year in the red at the beginning of the year that they have to fill through other sources. And they've done a fantastic job historically of filling that through other sources. This 14% number that the subcommittee came to is relatively arbitrary. I think the board should figure out an amount that would cover that $4 million hole. And that is roughly 20%. And so, like other speakers, I'm in favor of 20% going to transit. I think that that is fair and equitable. I'm also a Eureka resident. I'm now paying 10.25% sales tax. Almost all of my trips in my life are on city streets or Caltrans maintained streets. I very rarely use county maintained streets. Lots of Eureka residents are like me too in that respect. By funding transit, we at least make this a little bit more equitable.
Supervisors debated various funding structures, making and amending various motions. Madrone's motion for a 19% transit share, with 1% shaved off to cover administration of roads project funding, didn't get support from Supervisor Rex Bone and Board Chair Michelle Bushnell. The Measure O split will be done under a 5-year spending plan, and Bushnell said the shares can be renegotiated after the county catches up on some fast accumulating road maintenance.
I do strongly advocate for that our roads are in such dire need, and plus we have a $7 million deficit over there. And if we could just really in the spirit give it to the transit 15% and have the I'd be okay with the rollover not going to the CAO, but just let the rest of it try to make up the deficit in our roads and to fix our roads, and then 5 years from now we'll have another shot at trying to fix it and give it more to transit. And maybe by then our roads will be in much better shape and we can give 20% or 25% to transit to up them. I just really, really, really have to advocate that we're in a mess in the roads department.
Bone said he gets more calls by far about the condition of county roads than transit. And during a staff presentation, supervisors were told that the county has $5 million worth of road pavement needs over the next decade, and Humboldt County has some of what the presentation described as the worst pavement conditions in the state. After debate and negotiation, a successful motion emerged to approve an 85-15 roads transit split. The motion included several conditions, including a non-binding target of using 5% of the roads funding for complete streets projects that facilitate walking, biking, and public transit. The motion gained unanimous approval, which Madrone described as an example of the board's commitment to, quote, find common ground with each other. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Recent changes in government policy have sent local businesses and nonprofits scrambling to adapt to on-again, off-again tariffs and slashes and rollbacks in government funding. To get a sense of the effects these changes are having locally, the North Coast Small Business Development Center, or SBDC, is conducting a survey among its members. Small business owners and nonprofit leaders have until midnight tonight to fill out the Humboldt County Economic Survey, which will help the SBDC see how it can best support small businesses and nonprofits in Humboldt and Del Norte counties. We spoke to Nancy Olson at the Eureka Chamber of Commerce about the survey and the effects that recent government policy changes are having locally.
So this survey is it started out local for Eureka. I was working with the city of Eureka and with Eureka Main Street on it. So I want to give them kudos for their early investment in developing it. And as the broader county conversation around the impacts of what's happening at the federal level, you know, how that's hitting businesses, how that's hitting nonprofits, you know, if for good or for challenging, we opted to open it up to the whole county. So it's just checking in to see how folks are doing in a general sense. And then we also ask a couple of questions that are specifically related to how are the things happening at a federal level impacting them. For us as a chamber, we will use it to inform our work. It will share with us, you know, where our businesses are struggling, where they're succeeding, and how can we best meet those needs. And hopefully that will also be the case for other chambers, as well as other business serving organizations, and cities in, and the county around Humboldt. Well, there's been a whole heck of a lot of changes at the federal level, as we all know. And some of it is related to, you know, the tariffs, which are, you know, have been a little on again, off again. Some countries are tariffed more, some are not. So we're waiting to, you know, see where the dust settles on that.
Olson shared with us a couple of examples of how the Trump administration's tariff and funding policies have affected local small businesses and nonprofits.
I got a message from a friend of mine who owns a local store, and she got a message from companies that she imports from that they were adding like a 50% tariff cost to anything that she purchases through them. And this is a vendor she uses all the time. I believe they're located in Canada. And that's just an example. I've talked with folks in the coffee industry, and they're, you know, getting extra tariffs on them. So that raises the cost of goods. And of course, that means that those costs are by necessity passed on to consumers. And for nonprofits, we actually lost a grant, a contract that we had to support businesses connecting with high school students to do internships and that kind of thing. So that funding is gone. That position that we had is gone. This as our own example, but that's happening to a lot of nonprofits that are losing their funding, or their funding is kind of tied up as the new administration considers what their priorities are and how that work aligns with their priorities. So I think that there will be a fairly substantial financial hit to our community, but we'll see where the dust settles.
Given the effect the administration's policy is having at the local level, Olson stresses that a robust response to the survey by small business leaders is all the more important. But how will the data from the survey be used to help businesses and nonprofits?
All of us as business-serving organizations have a certain set of services that we provide. And we are local enough and small enough that we can be nimble to adjust what we're doing to meet the more immediate needs of our businesses. So for example, I know SBDC is gearing up to do some training on marketing. Main Street is going to be using this data to figure out what new strategies they might want to employ. For us, it would probably align with education and maybe some advocacy and things like that. And for organizations like REDEC and North Edge, it might be, you know, these are some of the things that we need to be looking for as we as we consider grants and loans and things like that. And I've talked with folks at banks who are kind of anxious to get this data as well. And I will say that we'll be sharing this with both local, state, and national level elected officials so that they are informed about what's happening in Humboldt County.
That was Nancy Olson from Eureka Chamber of Commerce speaking to KMUT's Lauren Schmidt. A link to the survey can be found on the Eureka Chamber of Commerce's Facebook page. The SBDC is offering a number of free courses and learning programs ranging from startup bootcamps to AI basics. You can check out their offerings at northcoastsbdc.org. In state and national news, Congress is expected to lay out massive cuts to Medi-Cal, which critics say would gut school budgets since the program covers many school-based health services. Susan Potter reports.
Medicaid is in the crosshairs, as Republicans in Congress are expected to lay out proposals in May to cut $1.5 trillion from the federal budget, prompting strong opposition from educators. 15 million Californians rely on Medicaid, known here as Medi-Cal, for their health care. But as Myra Alvarez with the Children's Partnership notes, the cuts would also deal a devastating blow to schools.
Medicaid is the third largest source of funding for K-12 public schools to help children have access to routine health screenings, preventive services, and physical, speech, and occupational therapy.
The Trump administration is looking for savings to fund the president's other priorities, including extending his 2017 tax cuts, which primarily benefit the wealthy and corporations. School districts are uneasy because they are legally required to provide accommodations for students with disabilities, regardless of how much the federal government is willing to reimburse. Sacramento County Schools Superintendent David Gordon says districts would have to make big cuts across all programs.
So without those funds, there would be a huge bill and school districts would be forced to basically play financial roulette to figure out what do we cut.
Gordon says his district uses Medi-Cal funds to place mental health clinicians at each school site so students with psychological needs get early diagnosis and treatment. Shayna Hazen is a trustee for the San Diego Unified School District. She says people don't realize the critical role districts play in providing health care services.
Students rely on Medi-Cal for things like audiology, mental health support, nursing and wellness, occupational and physical therapy, home hospital care. These are really essential for many students with the highest needs.
That was Susan Potter, who also shares this report about Congress, which is expected to consider on Wednesday whether to revoke a waiver that allows California to set strict emissions rules.
Republicans want to strike down the Biden-era waiver that allows California's emissions rules, which require all new passenger cars sold in the state to be emissions-free by 2035. Bill supporters argue the California rule hurts the sale of gas-powered vehicles. Rob Sargent with the nonprofit advocacy group Cultura notes that President Donald Trump also wants to revoke tax credits that help people afford electric vehicles.
The biggest potential beneficiaries of these tax credits for new and used vehicles are really the backbone of America. They're contractors driving 150 miles daily between job sites, rural drivers, tradespeople, and working families who live where housing is more affordable and jobs are further away.
People who use more gas than the average driver are called gas superusers. A new study from Cultura found that California's 2.2 million superusers spend over 15% of their household income on gasoline and make up 34% of the state's gasoline use. So they would benefit most from an electric vehicle. Sargent says the Trump administration's anti-EV policies are bad for California drivers and go against efforts to cut air pollution.
If Congress acts to pull the rug out from under those states' ability to make cars cleaner in their state, then it will undercut the availability of electric vehicles for consumers.
The report also looked at data from California's Central Valley near Visalia. In that area, super users would save an average of almost $5,000 annually on fuel by switching to an EV. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
And finally, the redwood forests of Del Norte and Humboldt will see an onslaught of furry creatures, fighter pilots in orange overalls, and lightsaber-toting rebels from another galaxy. Yes, redwoods are turning into Endor again as the Humboldt and Del Norte Film Commission prepares for its third Forest Moon Festival. KMUT's Sigurbjørn has more.
The Humboldt and Del Norte Film Commission was set up in the late 70s to facilitate film production in the two counties. While this remains the commission's chief remit today, its efforts have also focused on a different type of film-related services. Film tourism. That is to say, people traveling to locations their favorite movies were shot in. Through the years, Humboldt and Del Norte counties have served as locations for several high-profile movies such as The Return of the Jedi, E.T., Lost World, Bird Box, and the upcoming One Battle After Another, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, set to premiere in September. According to Film Commissioner Cassandra Heseltine, filming in the two counties has taken a downturn in recent years, following the expiration of the state's tax incentive program. So emphasizing the area's past movie history has become all the more important. We spoke to Heseltine about the commission's shifting focus and the upcoming Forest Moon Festival.
Back in the day when film commissioners first started, they definitely were created to help basically facilitate when productions came to your area to film. But with the explosion of social media and tourism in general, and, you know, just movies and people having the luxury of getting to travel to experience where a movie maybe was filmed, we've watched film tourism really take off. And so about 10 years ago, we'd started launching, 10, 12 years ago, we started launching part of the programs. Like, our first one was a map. And actually, that was not our idea. It was actually created prior to me, but it only covered Humboldt at the time. And it was major films and productions that had filmed in the area. And it was created by a gentleman who volunteered for the Visitors Bureau. And we took it over, updated it, added Del Norte. We made it online. We turned it into an app. And that has been huge. We've had over a couple hundred thousand views now at this point and downloads. And it's on Google Maps. And the brochure runs out every year. And the state parks have told me it's the number one brochure that they run out of. Matter of fact, the one that was taped to their counter even got stolen. So people love going to see where E.T. filmed, or Return of the Jedi, or Outbreak and Lost World, you know. So it's a really fun guide. It's you get to do it by yourself. So it was really popular during the pandemic. Most of it is going outside and looking at the location and finding our little marker that we place there. And we went on from there to do more activities. Like, we have a red carpet gala where we, you know, show the Academy Awards and people get dressed up, and we give out community awards for being film friendly. And then we advance to, well, you know, Return of the Jedi filmed in both counties. Maybe we should throw a Forest Moon Festival to celebrate that. So we've indeed started that now, and that'll be at the end of May. It's the first weekend after Memorial Weekend, and we're on our third one. And that's going to be an exciting one this year. And we bring up professional costumers like stormtroopers, Darth Vader, Princess Leia's, all of that from per Lucasfilm. They come up and do appearances. This year we will have some celebrities, so we're excited.
Among the special guests making an appearance at this year's festival is Kyle Newman, director of Fanboys, a 2009 comedy about Star Wars geeks who set out to steal the rough cut of The Phantom Menace, or Star Wars Episode 1.
And we also then last year decided to launch, because we had nothing else to do, we decided to launch a museum of cinema in Old Town Eureka, where we change the exhibit about every 3 to 4 months and feature something about the region in regards to a theme. Right now we have women in film, and it's pretty pretty lovely exhibit right now dedicated to 5 women directors who directed movies here in the area, as well as local women who work in Hollywood but live here. And then our next exhibit will be featuring Forest Moon Festival, or AKA that we were the film sites for Return of the Jedi's Endor. So that'll parallel with the festival.
The Forest Moon Festival takes place the weekend after Memorial Day, May 30th to June 1st. You can check out the event schedule at forestmoonfestival.org. We also spoke to Film Commissioner Heseltine about the state of filming in Humboldt and Del Norte, and we'll air that portion of the interview at a later date. My name is Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMUT.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters, Elise Cox, Daniel Mintz, Lauren Schmidt, Susan Potter, and Sigurd Bjørn. KMUT News is online. You can find us on kmut.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmut.org. For KMUT, I'm Christine Alexandria. Thank you for listening.